This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Massive security breaches at major companies such as Target, Home Depot, and Anthem make national headlines, and there certainly is real cause for alarm. But more than 75% of data breaches happen to small and medium-sized businesses, since criminals always look for the easiest, most vulnerable targets. Joining us to discuss the importance of data security at smaller organizations are Jack Greiner, a partner at Graydon Head. He leads their Media Communications and Information Industry Group. Jonathan Adams, co-founder and president of Salix, a records management and litigation support company. And Cincinnati BBB public relations specialist Sandra Guile. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jack, John, Sandy, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon.
John, I like this. I read something you wrote where you described the World Wide Web as the modern day Wild West. And why is that?
Well, it is a place where, unfortunately, there aren't a tremendous amount of regulation, and so, which is a good thing, but it also allows for both great things that come from access to data, but also lots of opportunity for those that want to take advantage of those that might not be as technically savvy. And so, as we were talking about in the break, there are scammers that exist on the telephone. There are scammers that exist in person. But now, with the proliferation of technology, access for scammers to a large group of scammers, to a large group of people, is significant because of the proliferation of technology.
Mm. What are they looking for? What kinds of information are they trying to steal?
And so, you know, one of the interesting things is that over the last 15 years, hackers have gone from pranksters to profiteers. And what I mean by that is 15 years ago, you'd have experts, computer experts, that would have to be hack into an organization, and oftentimes they would hack into a government agency, and they'd put up a silly logo, and the whole goal was just to show that they're smarter than everybody else. Well, today, those pranksters have, as I said, turned into profiteers, and those profiteers might be nation states. So about 2 years ago, the U.S. government came out and said what lots of us in the security industry have known for a long time, which is that the Chinese government is sponsoring a tremendous amount of the hacking that's taking place, all the way down to the folks that are sitting next to you at Panera when you're on the free Wi-Fi at Panera. And so the folks that are perpetrating those attacks, there's a large gap between the level of sophistication and even the size of the folks that might be attacking.
And this can run the gamut. It can be, like you were saying, individuals, it can be groups, it can even be governments.
Correct.
Yeah. So what is it in particular that makes smaller businesses more vulnerable?
Well, typically, it's the approach that they take to protecting their data. And so we oftentimes hear folks give two different reasons for why they're not taking cybersecurity seriously. And one is that it won't happen to me, and the other is, if you can't stop them, why even try? And so lots of folks, smaller businesses, think, who cares about little old me, and do I really have data that they're interested in? And then they also look at the alternative, and they say, if Home Depot can't protect themselves, if big banks can't protect themselves, then we don't even have a chance as a small organization. And so those two attitudes we see pretty prevalent in small organizations, and we see that as being a real stumbling block from them taking just even some real basic steps that could have a significant impact on protecting their organization's data.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of them would look at this too and say, boy, this is costly. How can I keep up with all this?
Right, and it is, and so it's good because when I talk to our security team, you know, one of the things I talk about is, you know, folks are going to want to know some real basic things that they can do to better secure themselves, both personally and within their organization. And it's amazing because it's one of the great frustrations, I think, for most computer users is the changing of passwords, where the idea of every 3 months having to change your password. And so people just think, okay, I'm going to add a digit to the end of my old password. And so, and that's going to protect us.
May not work.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, I think, you know, the, and so unfortunately, folks not taking the password seriously, every digit that you add adds a significant amount of time that it would take somebody to hack into whatever account they're trying to hack into. And so the more difficult that you make it for these folks, the more likely it is that they'll move on to an easier target.
There are legal risks as well, aren't there, Jack? I mean, what happens to a business that doesn't do anything to protect the information that it collects?
Well, there's different levels. There are regulated industries. The healthcare industry is subject to privacy regulations under the HIPAA statute. The financial industry is subject to regulations under the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. But really, the more frightening aspect that we've been looking at is the fact that really virtually every business is subject to the oversight of the Federal Trade Commission that looks at whether businesses are engaged in deceptive or unfair practices. And the FTC has jurisdiction to deal with that. And they have been getting very involved in the privacy world, looking at, for example, if a business puts out on their website a privacy policy and says, well, we do this, 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 and this, and if in fact they don't, that is considered deceptive, right? And even businesses that do what they say they're going to do, if their privacy protocol isn't really up to industry standard, that is, in the view of the FTC, an unfair practice. And just to illustrate the point about risks for smaller businesses, you know, we've seen situations with not tremendously large businesses get in the crosshairs of the FTC and be subject to significant fines and oversight that goes on for literally 20 years. The FTC, as part of a consent decree, will require reporting on typically a quarterly basis for a period of 20 years. So can you imagine that, to have that obligation for two decades? But it happens.
Well, you were saying it can be viewed as being deceptive. It's also a breach of contract, isn't it? If you have a privacy policy out there and then you're not really doing anything,
Well, it could be, depending on the way the privacy policy is drafted. That's going to be a case-by-case basis, but there certainly could be that argument made as well.
Yeah. Sandra, the BBB General, you're out there, you know, telling us about bad businesses, who to watch out for. Mm-hmm. So why are you involved in data and protecting data? Why have you become concerned about this issue?
Well, basically, I'm here teaming up with these two gentlemen right here, and that's because businesses do have an ethical standard that they have to live up to in protecting consumer data. So the little guys that are out there, the small mom and pop shops, the nonprofits, the charities that actually do collect data, names, addresses, emails, phone numbers, credit card information, that kind of thing, you have an ethical responsibility to keep that information safe. As a consumer, every time you swipe your credit card, you give that information, you're entrusting that business to keep it safe. So you have a nonverbal commitment, if you will, contract between business and consumer that you're going to keep this information within the confines of your business in order to conduct that business, that you're not going to sell it, that you're not going to do anything illegal with it. So why we're concerned is because, as you mentioned at the very top of the show, a lot of data breaches happen to the small guy. They mm-hmm. have limited resources. Oftentimes, they probably don't have an IT department they can rely on, right? And that if something does happen, they're going to have to go through and spend a lot of money to rebuild that reputation. They're going to lose approximately 31% of their consumer base that they said, I trusted you with this information. I'm not going to do any business with you. So within 6 months, you're going to see out of business.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is get the word out there and get the message out there that you are at risk, and here are some things that you can do to take steps to protect that information, to protect your business. And we're trying to look out for everybody, whether you're accredited or not accredited.
So 31%. They lose 31% of their customers.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the financial implications of this are huge.
Absolutely.
For small
business. And on average, in trying to recoup those businesses or those consumers to come back is about $36,000, if not more. And that is to offer up, you know, your credit protection. I mean, think about the big breaches at the big companies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to offer you credit protection for a year. It's like a minimum of a year. And to try to go back and recoup that when you're the small mom and pop bakery shop or small mom and pop hardware store or anything like that, you don't have those deep of a pocket to offer those kind of services. So you need to do everything possible on the front end to make sure you have a plan in place and a strategy in place that what happens if a data breach were to happen to me today, do I have those measures in place?
It wrecks you financially, but it wrecks your reputation too.
Absolutely, because
that's priceless.
It is. And when you think about the tri-state area, everybody knows, you know, one another, that whole 6 degrees of separation, you know, where you went to high school and that kind of thing. If you don't want to do business at that small business, then they're going to go elsewhere.
A recent study said that the average, that two-thirds of the small businesses that have a data breach will go out of business within 6 months after that breach. And so it is a huge, the implications are huge. And oftentimes, I think folks just put their head in the sand, hoping that they won't experience the downside of, a breach.
It sounds, Jonathan, like it's more costly to ignore this and say maybe this problem will go away than it is to take steps and try to do something about it. What's the first step that a business should take?
Well, I think the easiest thing is what I talked about on the taking passwords more seriously, and then really doing having a full understanding of the data that exists within your organization. What data is truly sensitive, and then coming up with a strategy to make sure that data is protected, and that could be different encryption tools that you might use. It may be technology that you use to be able to keep people from getting in into your infrastructure. So historically, not to get terribly technical, but the you have the internet, and then you have the computer infrastructure for an organization, and what kept let good data in and out and kept bad data from coming in and out is a firewall. And so historically, every company has a firewall, no matter what size, and so that was a reasonable level of security. Well, every day you hear on the news of another data breach, all of those organizations that have the data breach have a firewall. So the days of a firewall being enough security, unfortunately, that is no longer a reasonable basic standard for security, and yet there are still lots of small businesses that 100% rely on that as being their only strategy.
There's also cyber liability insurance.
Oh, okay.
I think that businesses should really think pretty hard about that, taking on a policy like that. They're probably, in fact, in all likelihood, the general liability policy that you have as a business is not going to cover most of the risks. It's certainly not going to deal with third-party issues that might come up. In other words, if you are a customer, you have customer data, for example, and that customer's data is breached, and there's harm to that customer. You know, you need a policy that will address that situation as well. Again, your general liability policy, in all likelihood, won't. And really, the process of acquiring the cyber liability insurance is a pretty involved process, which actually sort of works as an audit on your practices. So in and of itself, almost going through the application process will be illuminating for many businesses.
If you don't handle your own website, does it also cover that? Like if I'm a small business, but I know nothing about HTML or handling my own website, would something like that protect me?
Well, you'd have to look. I think to be a little self-serving, it's probably not a bad idea to sit down with a lawyer and kind of go through the policy.
It's a lot
self-serving, actually. I'll be honest.
You're allowed to be self-serving.
Yeah,
that's okay.
And I'm sure we can probably find lawyers like you through BBB.org.
You might be able to do that.
Yes.
Jack, are those kind of policies expensive, though? Is that cost prohibitive for a company?
It really is going to vary from business to business. And, you know, what can you afford? And I think you need to think about the cost benefit like any other policy of insurance. But, again, I really do think that just the process of applying may be worthwhile, even if you opt not to take the policy on, because of the requirements that you need to go through. So we found, frankly, with our own law firm going through this process was pretty valuable, just the application process itself.
So it sounds like communication is key then in a business, would you say so?
Well, yeah, and especially on the insurance side, the interesting thing is that it's not like traditional insurance, where with car accidents or with life insurance, you have actuarial tables of data that show here is what we can assume will happen.
Mm-hmm.
From a data breach standpoint, that the playing field changes every day.
Yeah.
And so we speak a lot to our clients about the fact that we really, and we actually work with some large insurance companies in helping them provide additional products, because we don't believe they fully understand the risks that they're underwriting. And so we think it's cheaper than it should be right now.
Right.
And so every small business hates spending any additional money, but for the risk compared to the cost, it is really a wise thing to look at. And in addition to that, I think to piggyback on Jack's point, you know, a consulting group will go out and will review policies, and it is frightening what some people have. They say, I have a cyber liability policy, and they've taken those steps. But one policy we looked at recently for a reasonably sized organization, the policy said that it only covered desktop computers.
Oh, goodness.
And so you think about, how, you know, the real risk is on mobile devices.
Yeah, read the fine print carefully. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you think about the fact that, oh, we're covered, only to, as you said, look at the fine print and see that, oh, that's just desktops.
John, what about these companies that do provide a mobile device for their employees to use? How much are they opening themselves up to attack?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question, because it is there's an inverse relationship between convenience and security. And so every time that we add convenience to our lives, we're giving up a little bit of security. And so people ask me, do you think BYOD, bring your own device?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that from a security standpoint, that makes sense for organizations to allow their employees to do? And from purely a security standpoint, it does not make sense for them to do. But when they say, so do you recommend that people don't? I say, no, I actually recommend that they do allow bring your own device. And the reason for that is, mm-hmm. is that the devil you know is the better than the devil you don't.
Okay.
And so the more that you purely look at security and you lock your infrastructure down from a security standpoint and you lose flexibility for your users, you push them to leverage technology that your IT staff isn't aware of. So all of a sudden people start saving things to Dropbox, or they start taking pictures with their phone so that they can review documents later. All these things that if you had understood the need of the client or of your internal customer, being the employees of the organization, if you really took the time to understand that and didn't just think of it purely from a security standpoint, then you could at least put policies in place to be able to protect your organization instead of just acting like that doesn't exist.
Jack, how important is it to get everything, get it in writing, have that policy in place? That's as crucial as deciding what strategies you're going to take, isn't it?
In terms of BYOD policy.
Or any policy regarding cybersecurity.
Yeah, I think so. And I think really having an understanding of what you're doing. I think there was, as happens in a lot of settings, you know, I think that you have a situation where the CEO or the president of the company says, oh, you know, we need a policy. Let's do that. And then somebody goes and downloads one and says, well, here you go, you know, and they change it, right? And that's where people get in trouble, because everybody's happy now, we've got a policy, and nobody really bothered to read it or really ask the question, well, yeah, but do we abide by it? Do we follow it? And I think the same thing with the BYOD policy. If you're going to adopt one and put it in writing, et cetera, you better make sure it's being followed, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because I think sometimes the only thing worse than not having a policy is having a policy that nobody pays attention to, because down the road that could be awkward in a court proceeding, you know, when you're asked the question, well, do you actually follow this thing?
Well
it depends on the day.
Your Honor, maybe we do, maybe we don't. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Sean in Norwood. Good afternoon, Sean.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, what I don't actually totally agree on all this. I guess what I'm getting at is I think a lot of cybersecurity is actually being stolen from the inside, from the employees, from the people that work at these companies. I think a lot of that is going on, too, more than people coming through the Internet to a small business, maybe to Target and some of these other businesses. And I'm not saying don't change your passwords more often or get some type of different password for every single thing, but I think you've got a lot of employees.
So don't discount the internal threat is what you're saying.
Oh, I think the internal threat's big. I think it's bigger than anything, bigger than having a firewall.
John?
Well, I think for sure the terrifying thing is when you start thinking about people that you trust with data within your organization that might not be trustworthy. And there was a recent study done, HR study, where that they 13% of the respondents to the study said that they would go out of their way to negatively impact their organization. And so you think about the exposure that you have as an organization based on somebody internally wanting to go out of their way to hurt the organization. That's terrifying. And so it is important. Training is critically important within organizations so that people around the organization understand the implications and know what to look for, both from a malicious standpoint and the reality is there are lots of people that put things in email and they send it off and they don't think about their social security numbers in here, there's medical information, there's sensitive data, and so they're not even purposefully trying to hurt your organization. But if you send the wrong spreadsheet, there can be huge implications.
Wasn't one of the possibilities with the Sony breach last year that was disgruntled employees? That was an internal thing.
I think that was mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Was it mentioned as a possibility?
Right. Yeah.
And companies have some tools. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is that server, that computer system belongs to the company, and as a result, the company can monitor and check and. You know, they clearly have that right under all applicable law. So it is not a invasion of an employee's privacy if a company wants to do some monitoring. I think it's a good idea to let the employees know that that's happening, if the company reserves the right to do it. But I think that locks don't keep crooks out, but just keeps honest people honest.
Don't most companies have some kind of form or sheet that you have to sign off saying, yes, I'm agreeing to use the company's internet and computer software and everything else, and I could be monitored at any time, meaning I can look at your emails and
yes,
that kind of thing.
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
John, we talk about the cybercrime, but some of the data breaches are not in cyberspace, are they? Some of these things are because of devices that you might be using. Your printer, I've heard your printer can be a liability.
Right, and so there's CBS News did expose about copiers several years ago, and so there's a hard drive within copiers that most people don't think of, so when they exchange their copier at the end of the lease, they don't think, oh, I should make sure that any data is wiped from that. And so this expose went and they found medical records and very sensitive data that was very easy for somebody to grab off of data and copiers.
So how do you protect yourself in those cases? You just have to be very careful about what's laying around, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the reality is that there is data everywhere, from cell phones to USB devices. And so I think Jack's point about even going through that insurance process is making sure that you're have a game plan for how your organization is going to handle data of all sorts, because there are some very easy things that you can do that have a significant, radically reduce the amount of risk that you have, even from shutting off USB capabilities within on computer systems, so that people can't just simply connect up their USB device and take a tremendous amount of data from an organization. And so there are lots of things that can be done, but it really starts with doing an overall assessment and understanding what data is critical, what risks do you have, and what new things are being added to your organization on a weekly, monthly basis that add additional exposure.
And Jan, from a legal perspective, what are some first steps a company should take in this?
Well, I think you want to take a look at what is the breach notification status in your state? Pretty much every state has some sort of legal requirements about what you need to do if you become aware that your data has been breached, in terms of how you notify your customers. That would be one. I would also take a look at your own privacy policy and see what you've promised to do in the event of a data breach, and make sure that you're complying with that.
Sandra, the BBB is hosting a special panel discussion on data privacy next week. Can you
Absolutely.
Give me the information on that?
Sure. It's a BBB data privacy panel discussion Wednesday, May 13th at Interact for Health at 3805 Edwards Road. We begin at 7:30 a.m. is when registration is. The cost is $29 for accredited businesses, $49 for future accredited businesses. This cost includes breakfast, parking, and a self-evaluation, and it'll include these two gentlemen on the panel. We do have two others that we are including on this panel as well. You can register by calling 639-9146. You can find that more information on bbb.org. Learn about possible legal repercussions associated with data collection, review storage strategies for dealing with reputation damage from a damage from a breach, and provide a risk assessment as well.
Well, you can find a link to information on that, as well as registration information, at our website too, wvxu.org. And Jack, Jonathan, and Sandy, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Thanks, thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at wvxu.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney.